Hi, this is Kathy Ladman, and you're listening to Storyworthy, so focus.
Welcome to the Storyworthy Podcast. Here are your hosts, Christine Blackburn and Hannes Finney.
Welcome to Storyworthy. I am Christine Blackburn, and I'm here with
Hannes Finney, and we're coming to you from the Comedy Cellar, not in New York City, but in Madison, Wisconsin. Also, we've gone back in time because it hasn't existed since probably 1989. So we've got a new thing. We go back in time, but we don't want to talk about that. That's boring.
I am so not surprised that we are in Wisconsin.
But we're at the first comedy club I worked at regularly, owned by Sam Kinison's brother, Bill Kinison.
Because back then, comedy was so hot. Am I right?
Back in my day, comedy was everywhere.
Well, no, but it was in Wisconsin, for Christ's sakes. I mean, that's hot.
That's true. No, there would be Madison, at least, is a pretty big university town. I used to, like, make money doing comedy, like, in Delafield, which I guarantee you is really the nowhere. And it's like every disco, every place with a light and a mic was like, yeah, we'll give you $150 for comedy.
Wow.
I was like, it's a dumb time to start doing comedy because you're like, show business is easy. I love stand-up comedy. I don't need to go on the road. I can just drive around the Green Bay, Milwaukee, Madison area, Wisconsin, and make a living.
Well, at that time, you could, Hannes. I think that's amazing. And the reason why you're bringing this subject up is because tonight, our storyteller tonight, Kathy Ladman, she brings forth the topic. What are you saying? The Kathy Ladman?
The one and only Kathy Ladman.
Okay. The Kathy Ladman. Yes. She brings forth the topic, first brush with comedy.
Yes.
So what that says to me is, like, the first time she thought to herself, well, hey, you know, I could be a comedian.
Right. And unlike a lot of people in the 80s, she actually was a comedian.
Right. See, because I thought to myself, this is back in 92, I could be a comedian. And that's when I started at the Funny Bone in Pittsburgh, Pennsylvania. And I would go to their open mic nights.
Right. And at that time you were going through
a divorce. Right. So I thought, well, there can be nothing worse than this guy who just, my ex-husband got another girl pregnant. And, you know, it was so funny. It was hilarious.
Great.
And I thought to myself, you know, there can be nothing worse. So I may as well go up on stage and, you know what I mean? No, it was a good time.
Yeah.
No, it was a good time for me.
Yeah.
It was the impetus to get myself on stage. Is that the word impetus?
That is the word.
And my point is that
husband been impotent, you wouldn't have had this problem.
That was my first brush. You know, I remember saying to him, I remember in the later parts, right before we split, mm-hmm. but when I didn't know anything about this other person, I had no idea about this other person. And we hadn't had sex in weeks or months or whatever it was. And I offered to go down on him. There, I said it.
Yeah.
And he says, no, thank you. And I say, in my head, he's either getting in someplace else
mm-hmm.
or, you know, something's going on. This can't be real. And I should have listened to myself because that was exactly what was going on. Thank you very much.
That was a good picture to paint for all of us. We really enjoyed that. And yes. Yeah. If your husband is not 65, you know what, even if he's 65 and you offer to give him a BJ and he goes, it's all right.
Yeah.
Something's going on.
You're getting it from somebody else or something. Something's happening. Yeah. Anyway.
Yeah.
Nonetheless, that was my impetus to get on stage for the first time. And Kathy Ladman's here, and she is a very accomplished comedian, and
yes.
she's going to tell us her first brush with comedy. That's her topic.
And let's see. I want to I'll tell you my first brush with comedy in a minute. But first, I want to say that if you want to shop at Amazon, go to storywithpodcast.com and click on our Amazon link. That way we get a taste.
Your taste of money. It's funny you should say that, Hannes, mm-hmm. because a lot of people do say to themselves, gosh, we sure do like the Storyworthy podcast, and it's
not
free,
enough to give them money directly.
And it's free and all, but I don't have any money. What can I do? What can I do to help those people? And then some folks say, I'm going to go over to iTunes, leave them a good review. And we appreciate that.
Yes.
And
yes,
then others say, well, I'm going to do my holiday shopping at Amazon anyway. I'll go to storyworthypodcast.com first, click on their ad, and then they get a taste.
And then others will offer to go down on us, and we'll go, ah, it's okay.
Okay, so that's one thing. And then also, you can find Storyworthy on Stitcher.com. Not only iTunes. Of course, everybody knows about iTunes, and we appreciate that. But also Stitcher.com, and that's a great place to find thousands of podcasts completely free.
Almost as good as ours, but not
Stitcher.com.
Quite. Don't we have an app now?
And we have an app. That's exactly right. It is available for your Android phone, and you can purchase the Storyworthy app for only $1.99 at Amazon.com. Hannes, now is the time to tell us about your first brush with comedy.
Well, I'm going
to
say the first time that I ever actually performed what could be interpreted as stand-up comedy, I was, the Comedy Cellar had not yet opened in Madison, Wisconsin. I was a student at the University of Wisconsin, usually talking myself into classes I had no business being in. And this particular class, it was comedy and literature. And I said, aha, I like comedy. I think I'm funny. I'll go take this. Well, it turned out to be a class that was very much literally literature, like Mark Twain, which is great, but then very obscure, like this is what people thought was funny in 1840.
Yeah, in other words, it's not like hilarious funny. It's like, ha ha ha.
Well, it would be like, I remember this one. It was like a short story that was published in all the magazines of the time. And it's like this horribly racist story, like the most disgusting racist story in time, and this was hilarious in 1840.
Right.
And so that's interesting, not actually funny.
No.
Today. And I was a terrible, terrible student and could not like get it together to write a paper or anything like that. So I was like, I'll give you an oral presentation, which consisted almost entirely of me going up in front of a you know, the 25 people in the class at the lectern in the big room doing. And by the way, just to add the, see, you were talking about the divorce thing. See, my mother calls me literally maybe a day before I do this to say, hey, your dad called me. My dad had not talked to my mother in years. Always said terrible things about her and told me that he thought the CIA was bugging our bedroom throughout our entire marriage. So I'm like, oh, well, okay, that's fucked up. So then I go and I do this, and I just have no fucking idea how to do stand-up, but some instinct kicked in, and I'm reading some, like, thing I have, and somebody comes in late to the class, and without really thinking about it, I go, oh, let me tell you what I missed, which I now realize is a hack bit, but it wasn't hack because I didn't know anybody ever did it. And I went back and I redid the first 5 minutes really fast.
So
which
how
got
many minutes? So how many minutes are you on? Are you at the lectern at this point?
Yes, at the lectern. You know, that's a phrase that just takes the funny out of anything. You know, improv at the lectern was the first title for the show, open mic at the improv. And they said, no, let's leave lectern out of it. Maybe 10 minutes. And I don't remember what I was talking about, but it was funny. And it was complete bullshit because it did not prove that I had read or studied any of the material. But it was funny. And I'm pretty sure I got an A, which is how I got into college in the first place.
Terrific.
By complete bullshit because I could not study anything. And then later that week, I go back to Milwaukee and find out sometime during that week, perhaps while I was at the lectern, my dad committed suicide. So, there you go.
Hannes, is that
hilarious?
That's true. That's
yes,
true.
It's true.
So the week that you first...
The very week that I first did stand-up comedy is the week that my dad killed himself.
You know, it honestly, though, recently...
And it didn't stop me, and that's how you know you're supposed to do
it's
stand-up
like
comedy.
The best of times and the worst of times, right? I mean, there's like... You know, you
no,
maybe
my
found
life is
your...
always the best of the worst. It's never in between.
So you maybe found your calling that week, but then, I mean, how could the whole bottom fall out like that?
It didn't deter me, and that is how I say, like people say to me, you know, Kathy Ladman is indicating the classic, and now the comedy stylings of Kathy Ladman. By the way, this reminds me of a time, Kathy, you'll like this. I was doing some comedy show at the Bombay Bicycle Club in Burbank in the bar, right? Which has since been torn down, I
Beautiful.
Think, replaced by a hotel. And they were, it was the night they were first showing Schindler's List uncut on NBC. And so they had in the bar Schindler's List on uncut for the first half. Then they turned off the TVs and then had the stage in front of the big projection TV went, and now comedy! And that's how you know that you're fucked up. Yes. So that, you know, what I'm saying is...
Okay, listen, seriously, can we just get back for a second? Because that's a huge bomb to drop. I mean, your father committed suicide, and that coincided with the time that you might have felt your calling. Did you finish college at that juncture?
No.
You quit? Did you quit school?
Not immediately, no.
But what year were you in at that time? You were a junior.
I guess I was a junior, sure.
And so you were almost done with college, but then this happens in your family, and then what happens in your world? You
Nothing.
Say,
we all just go on and pretend it didn't happen.
Well, yeah, but then you quit school. So you
I didn't quit school. I just quit being able to bullshit my way through school.
So they kicked you out?
They didn't kick me out. I just kind of was like, I was looking at it going, I'm so far from a degree. I don't believe in degrees anyhow. We're all going to be dead in 50 years. What's the point?
I see. Yeah.
And now the comedy stylings of Kathy Ladman. Yeah. No, it's like I was always a cynical person. And it's like my life finally caught up with the cynicism I'd always had since I was 10 years old.
God, it's like so tragic. But then there's a comedy in you that comes from like this depth of horror.
Well, I mean, we've had the story about how my mother. All right, Kathy, let me tell you about my mother's death.
Break it down, man. All right. Break it down.
Hang on. No. This was the my mother has moved back to Germany, got remarried. She gets cancer. That's a long story. Check episode 5, I believe, of Storyworthy. And I'm there. I'm going through a duration. 3 o'clock in the morning, the phone call. Phone rings. I pick it up, and I hear this guy go, is this Hannes Finney? I'm like, yes. And he says, quote, unquote, your mother is dead. Because he was the only guy who spoke enough English to even put together a sentence. He was trying to be a nice guy. He wanted to do the thing where he's like, I'm sorry to have to tell you this, but he didn't have the vocabulary. So I get the phone call, and every time something horrible happens, this is also while my mother was going through chemotherapy earlier that year, my aunt and my uncle went to visit her. My aunt died of a heart attack on her couch. And then shipped the body back to the United
States. I'm terrified to be his friend. I will say that.
I'll tell you what happened. I remember because I called Christine. I said, you will not believe this. My aunt died on the couch. And instead of going, my God, that's terrible. It's a tragedy. Christine said, come on. Which is really the only reasonable thing to say.
I was like, are you fucking kidding me?
It's like, who came? You are an asshole. How dare you tell a story in such bad taste? Life is ridiculous, and people die at the most ridiculous times. And no, it did not stop me from... So what I was going to say is, you know, people always like, you know, it's like, I will say to people when they ask me, and nobody ever asked me about advice on stand-up comedy, it's like, should I do this? I'm like, if I can talk you out of it, you shouldn't do it.
If
you can be stopped from doing stand-up comedy, then it is not for you.
Not just stand-up comedy, but any type of entertainment. Yeah, a singer or a dancer.
If you can be remotely happy not doing it.
If somebody can say, like, yeah, that's not going to work out, and you say, well, okay then, then obviously you weren't that into it. I mean, because you have to live on rejection, man. You got to suck it up. Like,
and now the comedy stylings of Kathy Ledman. Hang on.
Like,
you know, I found a dog the other day. It was the cutest puppy in the world. Had AIDS. And now the comedy stylings of Kathy Ladman.
Ladies and gentlemen, this is getting ridiculous. God damn, you make me laugh, Hannes.
We've got to go to break so we can come back with comedy stylings of Kathy Ladman.
We do have a real storyteller coming up with a real story that isn't as crazy fucking heartbreaking as yours, Hannes.
I don't necessarily think that that's true. I think Kathy Ladman, I've known Kathy Ladman. I've met her many times before, and I think that she could have a crazy fucking story.
All right, you guys, wherever you are, stay tuned because Kathy Ladman is on her way up.
Storyworthy tweets. So join us on Twitter and be our friend on Facebook.
We're back. We've actually come back to the present day, and we're now at the Comedy Club on State in Madison, Wisconsin. And it's not cold at all. It's, well, we have gone through time where it's last summer, so it's like July, and it's very nice.
Okay, so you're saying that Madison, Wisconsin still has a comedy club. Is that what you're saying?
I think they have. Yes, they do.
Okay,
yes, they
fine.
Do. Well, I have not been there because I am back to Wisconsin due to legal reasons in so many years.
Except that we're here now.
Except for my outstanding felony warrant.
That's right.
But we are invisible. I forgot. We have a time machine and invisibility cloaks from Harry Potter. Also, one of our lamps is just suddenly dying here because
it's not important.
Okay. All right. That's good. It's good. We solved it. So tell us more about our guest.
All right,
and her comedy stylings.
All right, you guys. Kathy Ladman is here right now, and you know, she is one of the country's very top comedians. She has not only appeared on The Tonight Show 9 times, but was also the only female comic to appear on the last 2 Johnny Carson Tonight Show anniversary shows. Now, Kathy has had her own HBO comedy special, and her film credits include roles in Charlie Wilson's War and The Aristocrats, and she appeared regularly on ABC's Politically Incorrect and Comedy Central's Dr. Katz Professional Therapist. Now, Kathy has also appeared on Mad Men, Brothers and Sisters, Curb Your Enthusiasm, Everybody Loves Raymond, and I could go on and on, but let's move on to her writing career. She's written on many shows, including Roseanne, Caroline in the City, and The Carolyn Ray Show. Now, the Los Angeles Times put it best. Ladman has such clever, well-written material and such a breezy, unassuming delivery that it would be easy to overlook just how good she is. Her act seems effortless, and that is true. All right, you guys, you can easily find her at KathyLadman.com. Wherever you are, people, please put your hands together for Kathy Ladman.
My story is entitled More Gauze. I've told this story many times, but I've never written it out, so I'm glad that I have a reason to do so before it becomes folk legend and gets changed every time in the telling, like The Aristocrats. This is nothing like The Aristocrats, except that it does have to do with show business. I became interested in comedy when I was about 8 years old. I can't even remember how it happened. I can remember being about 6 years old and entertaining my family with my impression of my elementary school principal, Miss Carroll. I'll do it for you later. And I also used to replicate parts of the comedy album First Family, although I think I chickened out of a performance at the Brownies. I think I feigned illness. I hated the Brownies anyway. In their record cabinet, my parents had the First Family comedy album. Vaughn Meter, the comedian, and some other actors played JFK and his family on it. I remember in one section there was some reference to the quote-unquote high-priced spread, which was a nod to some advertising for margarine of that time. I'm pretty sure it was a wildly popular album. And can you imagine that? This was Vaughn Meter's career. And on November 22nd, 1963, his career just ended. Just like that. There's a downer. And now the comedy stylings of Kathy Ladman. I bummed myself out. There was also an Arnold Stang album in my parents' cabinet. And then there was this other one, Nichols and May Examine Doctors. If you don't know this, Mike Nichols and Elaine May were an improvisational comedy team in the 60s that used to perform in the Village, Greenwich Village, at coffee houses, on radio shows such as Monitor, and other venues I'm sure I didn't know because I was 8. Funny, I don't even remember anyone introducing me to these albums. If it was anyone, it would have been my dad. But I really think I found this stuff all by my little curious self. Nichols and May did improvisational sketches. They were smart and hilarious. This particular album was all about doctors, each sketch in some different way. Our record player was in this corner cabinet that was in the living room. You'd pull the center knob, and the compartment where the turntable was would pull out and down, sort of. You'd put the record on the spindle, the needle on the record, and then very carefully close the cabinet so as not to cause the needle to skip. I'm sure that my father went over this several times, and as in almost everything in our house, we were frightened into complying. The front facing of the compartment was in a woven rattan, and there was a circle where the sound came out. I would sit in front of that rattan circle and listen to that album until I became one with it. I knew every part of it. There was one bit called A Little More Gauze, about an operation, one called Out of Africa, about Dr. Schweitzer, and so on. About 10 sketches in all. I don't remember ever laughing out loud at it. Maybe I did, maybe I didn't. But I was so completely at home with it. I could do all of the voices. I had a good ear. And every night my mom would come into my room at bedtime, sit on the edge of my bed, and I would say my prayers and do a selection off the album for her. I don't think she knew what to make of it one way or another. I don't recall praise or admonishment. It was just neutral. Examined doctors remained a part of me as I grew up. I didn't use it often publicly, but it quietly helped me navigate through life. It brought me to acting in plays, and it brought me to starting a career as a stand-up comic, something that I had intentionally chosen for myself when I was 13. When I was getting ready at my apartment, When I was getting ready at my apartment in West Hollywood to do my first Tonight Show, I was about to start putting on my makeup, and I wondered what music would be appropriate for the occasion. I always listened to music while I was putting on makeup for a show. It was my pre-show ritual. So I looked through my albums, yes, albums still, and I stopped at Nichols and May Examined Doctors. Perfect. This is just perfect, I thought. There I was, about to do my very first Tonight Show with Johnny Carson, a dream of any young comic, and I was listening to the first artists who brought me into this whole adventure. It was a very sweet moment. A few years later, I heard that Mike Nichols was going to be honored at the American Comedy Awards, an event that I attended every year. So I brought my album and a Sharpie, and I went over to Mike Nichols' table and asked him if he would please sign it for me, and he said, sure. I told him that he and Elaine May were my first influences, and Diane Sawyer, his wife, got a big kick out of it. Then a little farther down the road, the Museum of Television and Radio put out a big coffee table book called Comedians, which featured photos and text about the world of comedy. I was featured in the book, and they asked me to write a blurb about my career, something about comedy and me. So I wrote about that time when I listened to Examine Doctors before my first Tonight Show and what it meant to me. A few years yet later, I got a call from my agent that I had an audition for a Mike Nichols film. Well, I was ecstatic. I was told I'd be auditioning with my friend Bill. We would be playing a married couple looking for a home. So we did the audition, and it seemed to go really well. You never can tell with these. Apparently, it had gone well because we got a call back. Now I was really excited. And Mike Nichols was going to be present in the callback. Oh my God! Even though I had met him at the Comedy Awards, this was different. He was going to be watching us perform. And then I made a decision. I didn't know when or if I'd ever have this opportunity again, and I decided to bring the album that Mike Nichols had signed and make a copy of the page out of the Comedian's book. Yes, I was going to risk looking like an idiot to make a connection with this man, this icon. So I did just that, and when we entered the audition room, I showed Mike the album and the page from Comedians, and it was lovely. I think he was charmed. We did our audition, and it went well, and that was it. And that was it. I didn't hear anything from my agent about it. It was a small part, and I figured that if we'd gotten the parts, we would have known very quickly. About 3 or 4 weeks later, my agent called. We got the parts. We got the parts. Unfucking believable. The shoot for that day was to take place at a private home in the Antelope Valley. I arrived at the location. It was hot and sunny there, and I was working on a Mike Nichols film. I went through makeup and wardrobe, and I reported to the set where we were going to film. They were getting ready to set up the next shot outdoors on the patio. Mike had hurt his foot, and he was wearing some sort of a soft boot on it. He wasn't moving around too much as a result of the injury. At some point, I found myself standing right next to him, shoulder to shoulder. It just sort of randomly happened, a configuration of the people there that day. Then something came over me. This wasn't premeditated. It wasn't even cursorily considered. I just started to do a selection off the album. I said, gauze. Mike said, gauze. I said, more gauze. Mike said, more gauze. I said, more gauze. Mike said, more gauze. I said, more gauze. Mike said, more gauze. I said, a little more gauze. And then I got mixed up. I think I was doing his part, and he was doing Elaine May's part. And I guess since I was the one who had started, I just got completely confused. And I just turned to him and I said, you don't know what it's like to be doing this with Mike Nichols. And he said, you don't know what it's like to be Mike Nichols. I ran over to where my husband and my stepdaughter were. They were visiting me on the set that day, and I told them the whole story. As I told them, the hairs on the back of my neck were standing up. Every time I tell the story, the hairs on the back of my neck stand up yet again. I think it is the most exciting, most grounding thing that has happened for me in my entire career. I really think it is. And no matter where my career takes me, I will always have this. This moment of pure crystallization that links my childhood with my grown-up me and tells me why I came here and that it was worth it. I think that through the course of one's life, there are goals along the way. And sometimes when we meet our goals, they don't seem as wonderful as they did when they were just twinkles in our eyes. But folks, this one held up, and it still does.
Oh, wow. That is beautiful.
Love that stuff.
That's very beautiful because it's true. You know, I'm from Pittsburgh. Hannes is from Milwaukee. And you do have this illusion of, you know, what it'll be like in a new place. And even though, like, I'm in LA and I don't have a washer and dryer and I don't have a dishwasher. But you know what? I'm still so freaking happy to be here. I don't even care about those
things
anymore.
Like, you know, celebrities are just people. But it's true. It's like they're incredibly talented, but they're also just a guy. Mike Gillis has had people coming up to him every day for 40 or 50 years,
yeah,
quoting things and talking to him. And it's, yeah, like, to be cool with that is great. You know, there are people who apparently don't react well. Although most, I mean, not that I've met too many giant celebrities, but they tend to be
most of
nice.
Them, I think most of them are really nice.
Down to
but
earth.
But some of them are real assholes. And
but they would have been an asshole even if they weren't famous.
Yes, they would have been. In fact, I know somebody who's famous now who was pretty much of an asshole when he wasn't.
In other words, it's like, so, there's good doctors and bad doctors, or good whatever,
yes,
ministers
like
and
anything.
Bad ministers, and then there's like shitty celebrities and good celebrities.
It's like anything.
It's like,
yeah,
anything.
It's like when they in politics where they, you know, if, you know, people are like, yeah, actors should shut up because they don't know anything. Some actors know things and
look
some
at
actors
Al Franken.
Don't know things.
Al Franken is, yeah, one of the most effective,
well-spoken,
yeah,
prolific
and
authors,
so,
yeah,
funny.
Listen,
you know, I just want to tell you, Pittsburgh, the Funny Bone, I loved.
Oh, that's
that
wonderful.
Room.
No kidding,
that was
kidding,
such
Kathy.
A great room.
Really?
And I met the Schneider brothers there.
Yes, that's right.
And we had so much
fun.
I think it's Mike
and
Jeff.
They owned the Funny Bone in Milwaukee.
Yeah.
Same people.
Jeff and
Mike?
Was it Mike?
Jeff and I forget.
Now I forget the
Adolf?
Other Schneider.
No.
You know, it's not there anymore. It's
I
unfortunate.
Know, but it
that's
was so fun.
Listen,
and Paul Reiser met his wife.
His
Paula
wife
there.
She was a,
yes,
waitress.
Yeah.
Paul Reiser
Let's
met
get
his.
Get back in the time machine and go back to when the Funny Bone was there.
A cocktail waitress.
Yes.
And I remember hearing that story, and I remember thinking to myself, well, there's hope for me yet. Maybe I'll just get plucked out of the, you know, I'll be a waitress here, and then I'll get plucked out that way. But that's crazy talk. I got to get the fuck out on my own. You know
right,
what I mean?
And it turned out if you'd been there a week, Paul Reiser would have come in a week later. And
Kathy, you flew right by the Antelope Valley. Please tell us more.
Get out of here.
No, but what does it mean?
The Antelope Valley?
Yeah.
You don't know where that
oh,
is?
It's
up north.
Up the one, isn't it the one? Is it the 118?
But
people don't know that in the world.
Oh,
nobody knows.
All right.
It
well, it's just, you know, it's just a desert community and
north
a
of
suburb
LA.
Of Los Angeles.
It's,
yeah,
one of those things where the farther you go out from Los Angeles, as in most places, but especially in Los Angeles, the farther you go out, the cheaper the real estate is. So you can have a job on the, you know, in the South Bay, but you have a, you know, you have a house in Riverside and your commute
oh,
is like
God.
3 hours.
You know,
a day.
You just like said made such a horrible
I know.
Picture. And,
I know. People
you know,
do that all
get,
the time and I
first,
can't believe
Riverside
it.
Riverside is awful.
It's just a nightmare because
Look,
it's just
I'm sorry
like
to
anybody who's
if you don't like
out
meth,
there.
That's your problem. But
I know it is my problem.
You know what's
right.
interesting is if you start going north on the 101 here in LA, you're going to start hitting this area where there's a lot of hills. Okay, so it's like a Valencia, Santa Clarita.
Right.
And
well,
you didn't
know
Calabasas, but toward Malibu, which is now. Anyway, my point is those are the hills that they showed during the opening credits of MASH. So you're hearing
oh,
the
right.
Do,
well,
and you think you're in Korea,
right?
But you're not. You're in Valencia.
Actually, you're in Cross Creek Park, I believe, and the MASH set is still there. And if you're, it's a
That's
giant
very
park.
Close
no,
to
Malibu Creek
yeah.
Park.
Malibu
right.
Creek Park, which is
right.
believed to. I mean, people around the country are like, we don't give a shit about this. But if
but
you
I'll
go there, you can see every time they pretend like a show, like a army show. Going to be in Thailand.
Mm-hmm.
They go to this one spot where there's this waterfall with these weird rocks, and it's like, hey, we're in Asia.
Oh, that's
and if
funny.
You turn over the other way, you'll see a little log cabin or something.
Bonds.
But you just have to be able to.
Yeah, you're in Bonds, right? There's a Blockbuster.
Yeah.
Kathy Ladman, I want to throw this by you.
You can. I'm not like Charlie Brown. You could just call me Kathy.
And you're not even going to know. You were an eighth grade English teacher.
Yeah.
And how long were you, okay, when you became an eighth grade English teacher, mm-hmm. that means you were in high school, then college, you wanted to be a teacher.
No, I wanted to be a comedian, like I said, since I was 13.
Okay.
But I was too scared.
And so you went to college, though. Where did you go to school?
Albany, New York.
And mm-hmm. so then you go into the education program.
Well, yeah, but I did a double major. I took media and communications and English education because, as my mother would say to me, you get something to fall back on.
Well, you know,
so encouraging,
now,
isn't it?
No, I understand that because sometimes I think that I should have done that too because I was like a psychology major, which means totally nothing.
No, we can totally dissuade you because she and I have the same story. Where it's like I should have just quit college way earlier and just started. I was like doing comedy a little bit and then the club
but
opened.
But Hannah, she was a teacher. She had a degree.
It's like, she only got it because she wanted to be a comedian. She was afraid.
But I loved college.
Yeah.
I didn't start comedy until I was 25.
No, I understand. But I'm just impressed that you went through a college degree. You said you were going to do this thing and then you became a teacher and then you chose. I mean, it just seems really bold to choose after you chose.
Right.
Then you chose again.
Well, yeah,
change.
It wasn't a happy choice. I was settling and I knew I never wanted to do it. And I'm so glad that I did it because I met my best friend who's been my best friend now for 36 years.
No kidding.
When I was a teacher.
And that is she still a teacher or he?
No, she she taught for a little while. Then she went back to get a second major.
Wow.
And became a TV producer. Okay. Took over my apartment in New York. And
she's the biggest
now
cocaine
not,
dealer on the Eastern
no,
Seaboard.
No, she's not in TV production. She works in kind of educational media.
Okay, so I know this about you. You're from New York. You moved to Philadelphia. You mm-hmm. go back to New York. You come out to L.A. Mm-hmm. But here's what I'm interested in. You have a beautiful daughter mm-hmm. named Milan.
Yes.
She's 8 or 9?
She's 9.
9?
Yeah.
Because my baby girl is 5.
Oh, wow.
Her name is Alabama.
Well,
oh, that's why it says Alabama. There. Yeah, there's many things around. Yeah, that's right. And anyway, it's super fun being a mom, right?
Oh, it's really exhausting. And I didn't take to it for a long time.
No
I have
kidding.
To say. Yeah, it took me a while to really enjoy it. It was because it was such a shock. I mean, I'd been doing what I've been doing. First of all, I was single for a long time.
Right.
I didn't get married till I was 41.
Right.
And then I didn't have Milan or adopt Milan until I think I was 48.
Wow. Okay.
And then I had to and I'm selfish.
Well, I mean, I had my daughter at 41, so just a little younger. But I know what you're saying because it's later in life.
Right.
But can you believe the power you have over your child? That's what blows my mind is the power I have. Like,
sometimes,
she believes me.
I know.
She believes me and she trusts me.
So
and sometimes
far.
I'm like,
well, so far.
Are you? Wow. I don't even know what I'm talking about.
I don't know. Milan really questions everything. She really does. She really does. Oh, you know, it was so funny. Like, we were trick-or-treating
sure.
the other night, which was hilariously fun. And we're in Santa Monica and we come out of this house and she's saying that she thought she knew this little girl or something. I think I knew her. And then she said, but perhaps I just met her. And and I said, perhaps you did. And right next to her was a plant, like one of these plants. I don't know the name of it, but it's the kind that has these very rigid green pointy leaves that come out.
Like
and in the middle, there's
succulent.
Like a cone.
Yeah.
There's a cone of like a yeah. dense gathering
like
of leaves.
Like a succulent, crazy,
yeah,
pornographic
a,
plant.
Right, and it's a real pointy thing in the middle. And so I said, right after I said to her, perhaps you did. And she looks at the plant and she goes, and perhaps I'll stick this pointy thing in your eye.
I mean, she's
Isn't
so fast.
Isn't that
fantastic? Oh, my gosh. Don't
she's
you
very
love
funny.
That?
Oh.
Don't you love that? It's
yes.
so fun being a mom.
It really is, I have to say.
I am I only have the one daughter as well. And I'm just I can't even tell you. Like, first of all, I didn't know I had that love in my heart. I didn't even know I had that to give.
Right.
And now I can't get over what a kick she gives me. Like, she just makes me laugh all the time. A couple of weeks ago, she said, Mama, am I a little woman? And she's 5. And I'm like, yeah, 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 you're a little woman.
And what did she say?
She said, I hate that book. She's very advanced. Very advanced.
Okay. So you still tour around the country now and then.
Very little.
Yeah. Not as much stand up as you used to do because it's changed, hasn't it?
Well, it's changed. I've changed. But I have to say, I've been doing more performing lately and I've been really enjoying it. But it's different. I mean, the types of venues that I want to do now are very different. I'm so not interested in doing like the improv or the comedy store or the Laugh Factory.
You seem more of a person that would do a benefit because you do have a big cause, right? You have a cause for anorexia.
Oh,
and
yeah.
People that have
right, that's true.
Eating disorders.
Right.
So
that's
now
true.
That might be a reason why it would get you to get up and go do a show.
Right. Definitely.
In fact,
that's the solo show that I'm working on now.
No kidding. Yeah. What's the name of that show?
It's called Does This Show Make Me Look Fat?
Not the show. No, not the show.
That's very funny. Sandra Singh Lowe had a book and she had flames coming out of her butt and it said, do these flames like make me look
right.
fat?
I mean, it's yes, it's sure. It's a phrase
it's
that's
absurd.
Often used. Yeah.
So my point is
but
that
really
now it seems
here.
Like you've elevated yourself. So you've done comedy. You've done all this TV. You've done all this stand-up.
Well,
and so does it seem like maybe you're becoming more important in your... No, not more important. I mean, like... You want to have a more
anytime
of a
you
purpose.
Want to finish this question.
Well, you know, I think that, I mean, I think that, I mean, different things have become meaningful for me now. Mm-hmm. And I feel almost like, you know, I'm not sure if I'm going forward in life or I'm moving laterally in some ways. It's very, you know, because I've changed my venues. So I'm not necessarily like moving ahead. Like I don't have like, I still can't fill a house that has, you know, 1,500, 3,000 mm-hmm, seats, mm-hmm. which I wish I could do. But I'm doing these other things that are very important to me that fulfill me. You know, I'm not interested in making rooms full of drunk people laugh.
Are you interested yeah. in maybe, you know, heading different sorts of... benefits for like people that have eating disorders, you know, like head it, like say Kathy Ladman's annual Santa Monica, you know, eating disorder
that's a
benefit.
One, absolutely. That's
I mean,
a
you,
great idea.
You could do that. I mean, you have a name and you have credits
yeah.
that could back up people coming.
Also the buffet there is fantastic.
No, but you would have to head all of this and it would be a lot of work.
No,
but I'm
no,
just saying
I
like,
but
I.
She's also talking about the kind of venues where it's just like people came to listen to you.
Well,
like they
if
went to
you're
see
doing
a play.
A benefit. Thought,
right, exactly.
If you're doing a benefit for people with eating disorders
yes.
that crosses a lot of people. I'm just saying that sounds like a really meaningful place to put your energy.
Yeah.
Something
it,
like that.
It is. It feels good.
And then
really
your daughter would look up at you, right? Then it was just that whole admiration there.
Well, you know, sometimes, you know, I'm very careful about what I say at home or anywhere in front of her about my feelings, about my body, because I don't want her to pick up on that. But I still hear her say sometimes, I'm fat. And she's like...
What is she saying that from? From
and I'm
school?
Asking, so I asked that to her. I said, what makes you feel that way?
Where is that coming
and
from?
And she said that somebody at school said it. And it's really insidious. I mean, I really think that girls pick up... I mean, boys must pick up things as well. But girls pick up a lot of things about their
yeah,
body.
So it's just a different version of that same.
Going to your daughter's school, you do a presentation there. I mean, I'm just saying like...
Well, it's young, but you know,
no, but there's
you're
an
right.
idea
I mean,
about, you know, cultivating a show that would be wanted
right.
and you could get paid for. And then also...
I don't know. I mean, I don't honestly don't know if I would know how to write something that would speak to that age.
I don't know. I mean, I think I don't know either, but I would think you would just be truthful.
Yeah. I mean, I think I would, but I don't know how to, I don't think I know how to like kind of formulate it.
What if you did it like a dialogue between a mother and daughter? About, you know what I mean? And then it's just like she asks, not necessarily your daughter, but somebody
it's
asks
a good
the
idea.
Question
perhaps
and the mother answers.
Some blonde 5-year-old?
That's a great idea.
No, but I'm just thinking about that. That could go all the way over the country, right? You'd have two actresses. You'd have a teenager and a mom. And the daughter says, Mom, why? You know, and there's just this conversation between two people on stage.
Right.
I'm just thinking about, you have this wealth of, you have all the credits to back up a big following.
Do you have some agenda here?
No, I'm just thinking about you because you're so, you have so much, like, Kathy Ladman is a mod on the Tonight Show 9 times. I mean, that's phenomenal. But comedy
Boy, was that fun.
But comedy is so different now. There's different mediums. It's hard to get your word across, right? So you
write a book. But you know, a lot of times I don't know, is that me? Is it because I've been doing this for 31 years? Is it because I'm 57 years old?
Hannes is 57.
I'm not 57.
You're very close to that.
No, I think it's just, I mean, yeah, we do change, you know, it's like, so, it used to be that, back when you're young, you're like, I can't wait to get out of the house. I want to be out 4 or 5 times a night doing it. Now you're like, oh my God, I have to leave my house 5 times.
Hey man, you want to play a little shotgun story worthy?
Yes.
Music can only mean one thing. It's time for Shotgun Storyworthy.
The game show where contestants spin the storyworthy wheel of truth and tell a true 1 minute story on the topic they land.
So everyone, say it with me.
Spin that wheel.
I can't believe it. The topic is mom. And you know, we were just talking all about being moms, and I think, oh God, you know, I want to talk about my mom. My mom is 90 and she has short-term memory loss, which is not great, but it really came in handy when we were planning a surprise party for her. See, now I'm doing material and I shouldn't do material. That's not fair. I should tell a story about my mom, right? Oh, shit.
Nah, it's fine. Go ahead,
man.
Do material.
All right, no, I really want to come up with a good story about my mom. And this is a great story. Okay, so my sister, Leslie, who's very fashionable, used to teach at a middle school near the house where we lived. And she goes over to my mom to visit. And my mom opens the door. And this was probably about 15 years ago or so. And my mom gained a lot of weight as she was getting older. And she also used to tuck in her shirts. And it got to the point where she had tucked in her shirt. And her bulbous belly was like, her pants were just like this bulbous belly that came almost under her breasts. And Leslie, in her inimitable way, stood there and looked at my mother and said, "Mom, your tucking days are over."
That's a great story. That's a perfect story about a mom. It encapsulates everything you want to know. Boom, 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 boom. We know about her mom.
Right. I'm trying to think of a funny story about my mother. My mother was from Germany. Well, first of all, I didn't know my mother had a German accent until I went away to college and came back. And all of a sudden, I was like, what the fuck? You have a German accent? I never heard it. That's the way she talked. I never understood that that was an accent, even though I knew what a German accent was, until I was gone for a significant period of time, came back and was like, oh, wait a minute. Okay.
You have a German accent like that. That's what you said to her.
Yeah. I was like,
you know, I wonder what people thought of Germany like in the year 1900, for instance. I don't know really intimately what the history was, but now, since the mid 20th century, you say Germany and it's sullied, you know. And I remember going there. I took a trip.
I'm not sure. What are you talking about? I have no familiarity. No, go ahead.
Right. Yeah. I took a trip there, and I was in Munich, and I went to this. I was by myself. I went to Europe for 3 weeks by myself because two friends canceled on me, and I said, "Fuck it, I'm going." And it was a really great trip. And so I went to Munich, and I went to this beer garden, and I ordered this Weiss beer, which was so delicious. And I'm not a big beer drinker, but it was delicious. And a pretzel that would have tipped the Flintstones car over.
Terrific.
And I'm sitting at like a picnic table, wooden table in the park. And looking at all these people around me, just on a beautiful afternoon, sunny afternoon, and thinking to myself, you know, I couldn't help looking at people of a certain age and thinking, what were you thinking back then? I mean, everything surrounds the whole, you know, thing, whole arena.
Yeah. No, I know. And I know we never talked about it. And I believe my grandfather was so old that even though he, I think he was 40 or something in the Second World War, I think they were actually drafting guys that old, but he had some sort of, desperate. They were drafting like 16 to 45, but he had some asthma or something, even for the desperate German army. Yeah. So he actually was some drafted in some way to be an auto mechanic for the army, even though it wasn't in the army.
But not in action.
And not in action. And he like was in, the only thing I know is that he was once in Paris and when it was occupied.
Wow.
And his joke was always like, I went to Paris. There were these 5-year-old kids. They speak perfect French. And I wasn't really adult enough to go,
right.
Okay, anything else that you noticed about that? But other than that, I think I had my mother had an uncle who died in the war, and that's nobody's ever told me anything else about anything that happened.
My best friend from when I was age 2 to 11 lived down the block from me, and we were, pretty much inseparable. And her mother is wonderful, and she knew a lot of things. And one of the things that she knew how to do was sew. And she was a wonderful seamstress. And I wanted her to teach me how to sew. And I went over there, and I was sitting next to her at the sewing machine, and I looked over on her arm, and there were numbers on her arm, and I didn't say anything. And then I went home, and I asked my mother what they were. And she told me, and I can't remember how old I was. I must have been like around my daughter's age, probably. And it was,
Christine,
completely
you don't know what
shocking.
These numbers were.
I'm sorry. I just can't even believe.
It was completely shocking to me.
So she had been in the Holocaust.
Oh, yeah. She and her husband had both been in camps.
And that's what her numbers were. Her numbers were identification of who she was at that time.
Right.
Wow.
I know. It's pretty wild. And my mother, and the thing is that I am, I'm Jewish and I'm not into religion at all. And my mother has always thrown organized religion at me. And it's like made me completely, completely shove the other way.
I have,
to this day, she's 90 and still doing it. She still sends me newspaper articles.
You. I have that in common. My mother is Catholic. My mother is one of those old ladies that counts money at the church. And she will never let it go about being Catholic. And she tells me which saints to pray to and when and why. Because I'm a cancer survivor. When I went through cancer. That.
And now the comedy stylings.
She told me who to pray to because that's the saint for cancer. And I would say, well, what if I pray to God? And she would say, you don't pray to God. Who are you to pray to God? You got to go to these saints. Like there's channels. There are channels.
Can you imagine when they say handed out the jobs and
Kathy,
that saint got cancer?
No, you know
like
what
the IRS up there.
Now that you brought this up, I want to say this. Yes. Because we got to wrap this up. Yes. But you were brought up Jewish. Your husband he was brought up Christian.
Yeah, it's called, his particular thing was called Swedish Covenant. Neither
it
one
doesn't
of
matter.
Our, neither
is,
one of us
neither,
is into
neither
it.
Neither of you are religious now.
No.
And I heard you say on another show that you don't care for the God Bless America.
Oh, did I say that?
I've heard you say that. You said that on the Facebook and maybe on another show.
You know what I said? Yes, it
but
was
whatever.
On Facebook.
What do you, what
and
do you
I
want
said,
to hear? How about,
and I
how about
said,
good times, people?
Well, whatever. You know, I don't care. But you know what? First of all, it's lost its meaning.
Yeah.
And the fucking flag pins are bullshit.
Yeah, we're over
I mean, it's basically everybody's
like
doing it
now.
So that the other side can't say that we didn't do it. So, I mean, why are you
so
doing it?
So what about the God Bless America? What do you want to hear? Anything at all? Thank you, people.
Nothing. Thank
good
you.
Night.
Good night.
Drive safe.
Be well.
Is it that? Because God Bless America is a pretty
be
arrogant
kind to,
song.
How about be kind to each other?
Be kind. That's like a Star Wars thing, isn't it? Was that be...
No, that's Bill and Ted's Excellent Adventure. Be excellent to each other, dude.
Okay, be
I
kind.
I say be kind.
Good
be
times.
Kind.
Be kind, America.
Yeah.
We
okay.
Should sing,
that's a great...
We should sing a theme from
good
times.
Be kind, America.
Fucking bullshit.
Okay.
God Bless America.
No, I hear what you're saying, man, because I
nothing.
Also... I don't...
It not only means nothing, it conjures up... politicizing.
Yes,
you know,
it does.
It's all
and
about
my
the game.
Mother, like my mother is very big about having the stickers that says one nation under God. Like, and I say, Mom, that didn't even start till the 50s. And besides, wasn't the whole nation created on freedom of religion?
Right.
Like it doesn't make
that's
any
what
sense.
These like Tea Party people who talk about, the founding fathers. The founding fathers were brilliant because the founding fathers were a part of England, which has a state church.
Right.
And they were well aware of how bad an idea it was to have the church
to mix it
and
up.
Government to be together. They very specifically said, no, just because they happen to be Christians doesn't mean it's a Christian nation. They very deliberately did not form a Christian nation. By the way, formed a free nation.
You might know this, but maybe some people who are listening don't.
We have pretty stupid people listening. So
the Church of... I love how the Church of England was founded. The Church of England was founded because Henry VIII wanted a divorce and the Catholic Church wouldn't give him a divorce. So he made his own church.
That is the entire reason. That's entirely right.
I mean, does that say bullshit or what?
Yeah, it's really crazy. But I think that for the most part, these times have passed. It's the old white man, 1950s Republican has passed. Am I right?
Well, unfortunately, from the recent election, we've noticed there's still millions of them out there, but they don't realize their time has passed.
There are more people
involved.
I hope
their time has passed. Because in order for their time to pass, people of a different mindset need to spring to action.
Isn't it exciting about being a mother and then be able to share that? And I'm going to wrap this up right now. We'd like to thank Joe Slepsky. He is the producer of the show, and he helps us out on a daily
basis.
That's
right. He's feeling ill today, but he's here with us in spirit.
Oh, where is Joe? He's not here right now, but we love him.
Okay, good.
And we believe in him, and he is part of the show.
Okay.
He's dead to me. We'd also like to thank John Thomas Griffith. You know, he's the guy, Hannes, who wrote the theme song, Follow Me.
Shortly before his death, I believe. Oh, wait, no, he's still alive.
I play tennis with him daily.
Oh,
well, you beat him,
great.
So he must be a dead
daily
man.
Daily you play tennis? Wow.
4 or 5 days a week. He beats me, nonetheless. I'd also like to thank Jorge Reyes. He's our sound engineer. Yay. Thank
living,
you, Jorge.
Living and breathing
thank you,
as
Jorge.
We speak.
Thank
and,
you,
of course, on behalf of our storyteller tonight, Kathy Ladman, thank you for being here, friend.
I had so much fun.
And it's a cold, damp evening.
It
and
is.
And it's a big deal to get out in L.A. in this kind of weather, and I know that, so thank you, really.
My pleasure.
And on behalf of you, Hannes Finney, my dear friend and co-host, my name is Christine Blackburn saying, make it a story-worthy week.
Thanks for joining us on the Story-Worthy Podcast. We'll be back next week with all new stories. Subscribe to Storyworthy on iTunes and visit the Storyworthy website at storyworthypodcast.com.
If you like listening to comedy, try watching it on the internet. The folks behind the Sideshow Network have launched a new YouTube channel called Wait For It. It's got interviews with comedians like Reggie Watts, Todd Glass, Liza Schlesinger, I've been friends with her for 10 years, one of the funniest people out there, and I still have a hard time with the last name, Liza. Our very own Owen Benjamin, that's me, takes you on a musical journey down internet rabbit holes and much more. You don't have to wait any longer. Just go to youtube.com/waitforitcomedy. There's no need to wait for it anymore because it's here and it's funny. And I love you.